You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Big Suey, presented by DraftKings.
Why are you listening to this show?
The podcast that seems very similar to the other Dan Le Batard podcast.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to apologize for that.
In fact, the only difference seems to be this imaging.
I have been tempted in restaurants just walking past tables to grab somebody's fries that if they're just there. That hasn't happened to you guys?
I've done it.
And now, here's the marching man to nowhere, Fat Face, and the habitual liar.
On Monday afternoon, Philadelphia 76ers star Ben Simmons practiced with the team ahead of their season opener on Wednesday. For the NBA fan that has been plugged into this soap opera that is Ben Simmons over the past few months, this might have been a welcome and unremarkable development. All is well, nothing to see here, move along. Yeah, right. As local media shuffled into Monday's practice for their scheduled check-in with the team, something was noticeably off, or I should say on. Over there on the court, Simmons wore a white sleeveless team hoodie and gray sweatpants, which in of itself looked pretty wintry for the occasion, but whatever. Upon closer inspection, the media spotted what looked like a cell phone protruding out of his pants pocket with a lit screen. Yes, Ben Simmons was practicing with some sort of device in his pocket as he bounced around the floor during live drills. Phone or not, there's some debate about what that device actually was. Make no mistake about it, this can be read as a giant FU to the Sixers, the latest demonstration of player empowerment, or at least an attempt at it. And then on Tuesday, Doc Rivers threw Ben Simmons out of practice for declining repeatedly to participate in drills, according to multiple reports. Here's what Joel Embiid had to say after practice.
At this point, I don't care about that man, honestly. He does whatever he wants, you know. That's not my job. That's those guys' jobs. I'm only focused on trying to lead, you know, the guys that we have here. And I'm sure they feel the same way because, you know, our chemistry has been excellent despite, you know, everything that's been happening in the last few months. I don't really care. At the end of the day, our job is not to babysit somebody. We get paid to put just on the court, go on, play hard, win some games. That's all we get paid for. We don't get paid to come out here and, you know, try to babysit somebody. And so that's not our job. And I'm sure my teammates feel that way.
Ben Simmons showed up to work, but this seemed like part of a larger scheme to embarrass the workplace. Like a guy at the office who cooked tuna in the microwave because he didn't get the promotion. The device wasn't accidentally left in his pocket, just like the microwave wasn't accidentally set to 15 minutes. And if I know anything about Simmons' agent, Rich Paul, CEO and founder of Clutch Sports and LeBron's longtime rep, it's that nothing is by accident. Everything is calculated with purpose. I just don't know if it'll work. As we head into the 2021-22 season, we're seeing some of the game's most high-profile stars testing the limits of player empowerment. Ben Simmons demanded a trade, refused to talk to the Sixers, and literally showed up unannounced to the practice facility the other day after it was determined he wouldn't be getting paid while sitting at home in LA. And over in Brooklyn, Kyrie Irving refused to get vaccinated like the rest of his teammates. And in the face of missing home games due to a municipality mandate, he assured everyone on a Zoom session from his dimly lit lair that everything would get, quote, cleared up. The Nets just said, no, stay home, we're good. And in New Orleans, Zion Williamson isn't practicing due to recovery from a secret August foot surgery that wasn't made public until the Pelicans media day at the end of September. There, a visibly doughy Zion, who missed a slew of team workouts over the summer, said, don't worry, I'll be ready to play for the season opener. However, David Griffin, the team's president of basketball operations, later told the media that no, Zion wouldn't be ready for the season opener, and the team had a different timeline in mind. And so, Zion waits. So a decade after LeBron made the decision in the ultimate display of agency, players have tried to likewise exert their power and wrestle back control from teams. In recent years, franchise values and player salaries have skyrocketed. Players have capitalized on the flow of money and staffed their own mini organizations. Stars have become teams unto themselves. And that's a concept largely spearheaded by LeBron, who made headlines for spending $1 million of his own money to take care of his body. Nowadays, stars have their own trainer, their own nutritionist, their own strength coach, their own traveling bodyguard, their own preferred doctors. It's a subtle message to the franchises. Why do I need you? Simmons in particular has had a history of privatizing the Sixers' plans. According to NBA reporter Yaron Weitzman of FoxSports.com, in 2018, the Sixers hired a shooting coach to work with Simmons on his jump shot, and the organization laid out a detailed regimen for him to follow. Instead, according to the report, Rich Paul indicated that there would be no need for that. We have a shooting coach for him already. His name is Liam Simmons, his brother. Needless to say, it hasn't worked out. So when I talk to executives and coaches, among their loudest complaints, beyond the referees, is that player empowerment has gone too far. Right now, we are seeing a market correction. Teams are fighting back. Ben Simmons, Kyrie Irving, and Zion Williamson are losing ground in the tug of war between player and team. Those players are coming to the realization that they don't have as much power as they thought. They're learning that there's only one LeBron and a bunch of stars who wish they were LeBron. From Meadowlark Media, I'm Tom Haberstroh.
All right, the Meadowlarkers are back. I'm Kate Fagan, joined today by Tom Haberstroh and Howard Bryant. Howard, we've talked in past weeks about this player empowerment in the NBA and whether it's a bridge too far at this point. What are you thinking about where the NBA is headed and where we find ourselves right now with that league?
I think the first thing is that I'm really concerned about, once again, what are the things that we talk about? We talk about language all the time. I'm not sure player empowerment is what we're talking about. I mean, is this empowerment, or is this just massively childish and massively selfish? And it's funny because all of these terms were once rooted in some form of rebalancing, some sort of honor, some form of that there was a nobility to where they were going, right? To where to the voice, that the voice was going to be used for good, or the voice is going to be used to the betterment of. And that really hasn't always been the case now. And so when I hear the words player empowerment, when I hear these different things coupled with Ben Simmons acting like this, or it was Zion Williamson, or whomever the latest player is, it's interesting to see. It's a careful what you wish for, because now these players have a lot of power, but it's how they're using it that is actually changing the definition of player empowerment from something positive into something that looks really ugly.
Yeah, because you can always see when certain rights are fought for, often the people fighting for them have this goal of using them, Howard, as you mentioned, for good or to further the ability for the future generations to have generational inheritance to their sport and to have a form of equity within it, whether it's in sports or outside of sports. But oftentimes, inevitably, when there is a fight for power, then an umbrella is formed under which people stand and hide under that umbrella, demanding things, wanting things, exerting control in the name of empowerment that, as you mentioned, is selfish and childish. And that's kind of where we see Ben Simmons right now. And I think I do get a little worried about the future of the NBA at this point, because they are busting down and crashing through all of the bridges of relatability that they had left. And I don't think that fans, the most charitable fans, need every bridge of relatability to be open to players. I mean, you've got some fans who just throw up their hands and they're like, these millionaires, I can't even imagine, you know, I can't imagine what their life is like. And there's no form of humanity even offered to them. I'm not talking about those version of fans. I'm talking about most fans who just want some bridge of relatability to remain open. It's fine that these players are making amounts of money that most of us can't fathom. That happens to be the business in which they are in. But when I look at Simmons right now and where the NBA is headed and where the connection to team and to history and to community, these parts of the game that I thought were integral to it, just being destroyed by someone like Ben Simmons, and I don't want to act like, oh, he's the canary in the coal mine and now there's going to be hundreds of Ben Simmons, but we've seen this at steps along the way over the last few years from the NBA. Like, is nothing sacred anymore?
Well, what I think is sort of interesting about it, Kate, sorry, but I think what I like about this conversation is that as selfish as it is, we're talking about this from a fan standpoint. I think about it from the player standpoint. Who is actually being served here? You listen to what Joel Embiid said in Tom's essay. And this isn't a player empowerment thing from the standpoint as players versus management. This is player versus player. You're messing up. These guys are trying to win. So it really is as individual an idea as you could make it. This is not a collective. And one of the themes that we've had throughout these sessions has been this idea of community. I could very well see if this were a labor issue where you're talking about the players as a collective, right, all rising along. These are very individual specific movements on the part of the, whether it's Kyrie, whether we're talking about Ben Simmons or whomever. So when I listen to Joel Embiid talk about this, I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, and never mind the GMs and the fans, you got 13 other guys in that room who are like, let's go. We're trying to win. This is our job.
Yeah, I'm looking at this situation and also pointing out the fact that a lot of this player empowerment umbrella label to what's happening with a lot of these stars is the gripes from the opposition, the executives, the coaches who are dealing with this and saying, this is too much. And maybe they have a reasonable argument here, but I just wanted to note that that's what is coming out from their side, is that this is not right. There's something broken in the system.
Yeah. Is it completely out of balance?
And there is also a faction of executives that I've spoken to over the years that believe that Adam Silver is very different than David Stern. Very different in the way he operates. Adam Silver, one of his first big tests, one of his first big moves was the Donald Sterling scandal. And it wasn't seen as something different that David Stern would do, but it was seen as more of like an olive branch to the players, a recognition that the players are partners and the players, I want to listen to what the players say first, and then we can deal with the ownership groups and what happens with them. He seems in his reign, Adam Silver's tenure has been very pro-player, to the point where some of the executives I speak to are wondering, who's paying his bills? Is it the owners or is it the players? And yes, he does need players to be bought in, but there is a concern that player empowerment is almost being fueled by Adam Silver trying to be more receptive to players and talking to LeBron James and Chris Paul and texting with certain players. And in that moment when he's talking to Bill Simmons, not Ben Simmons, at the Sloan Conference a couple years ago, and having that, yeah, I talk to players late at night and they talk to me about their mental health issues and that they're lonely and that social media is rotting their psyche. And that they're very lonely. I think part of the reaction to that, those comments by Adam Silver were, you're working for the owners here, and we need to push back against the players. The players seem to have Adam Silver's ear, and they seem to be having too much power, and some of these executives and coaches are fed up, and they're done with it. Anthony Davis, Jimmy Butler, James Harden, Kawhi Leonard. Now we're seeing Zion and Kyrie and Ben Simmons. But over the last few years, we've seen these superstars, in some cases just all-stars, not superstar, pry their way out of notably small markets and forcing their way to LA and to Brooklyn. And I think this is kind of the revenge, what we're seeing a little bit, the revenge of the team and saying, you know what, enough is enough.
But is it? Is it the revenge of the team? I mean, I think that it very well may be, but I think that, you know, you bring up a really good point, Tom. If Adam Silver is not careful, he's going to be the one who's out of a job, because at some point, the owners, whether they call themselves CEOs or managing partners or whatever, that's who you work for. The players don't choose the commissioner. But I think that the other piece of this is when you are in a situation that requires sort of boundaries, there are certain boundaries you can't cross, right? As much as you're trying to be pro player, as much as you may try to work with management, at some point, there's a reason why labor and management are on opposite sides. And in this case, what's happening in the NBA. And you've seen it in the NBA more than the other sports because of the structure, because of the revenue sharing piece of it, because of the high profile nature of the superstar players, starting back with Michael Jordan, that there has seemed to be a belief that the NBA could be partners with its players. And now I think you're right. I think now what we may very well end up seeing is a sort of backlash to remind both sides, you know, that the owners remind themselves that we're in charge and that the players are reminded that you're not. And then you get into this battle that is lifelong, owners versus players. And that's always been the game. And the NBA is sort of that test case as to whether or not there can be a new sort of a new landscape. But if any side of either side is going to abuse their piece of it, then you're going to have some level of warfare. I mean, there's a reason why we talk about this. The reason why everyone seems to be so player focused right now is because the players have been screwed for so long. And now we know that's not the case. Now the players, it's almost as if they're taking their revenge, going, okay, you guys had our number for so many years, and now we're going to extend this as far as we can until you try to stop us.
It seems like one thing that we're facing here, and we being anyone who cares about the NBA, is an abundance of choices for NBA players that didn't previously exist before player empowerment, before certain extenuations of free agency gave the impression, and I think the players truly believe, that all 30 teams are on the table. All of these markets, all 30 teams are on the table for where they should be playing. And of course, most people who believe in free agency are like, of course, all of those things should be on the table. But I've been thinking a lot about how that must feel and trying to relate it to my own experience in this world, right? So I'm trying to think, how does Ben Simmons feel right now? As much as I can read, as far as I can gather, it seems as if he's never really been forced to stay in a place that made him feel something and actually self-soothe and figure it out. It seems like most things along the way have been fixed for him, and everything you read about, you know, being coddled by his dad. I'm not even going to go down specifically Ben Simmons, but I'm trying to understand, what must it feel like to be an NBA player right now who seemingly has every market at their disposal? And I think a lot about this term called life optimization, right? That basically the essence of life optimization is that you have in your hand a device that can let you like Yelp and Google every restaurant in a city. So you do that, right? You spend an hour and you're like, I'm gonna find the perfect restaurant tonight where the lighting's gonna be great, the food's gonna be great, the ambiance is gonna be great. And you do all this research and then you get there and like something's not right. Whatever it is, you're like, you wanted calamari on the appetizer menu, but it's not there, they don't have it that night. Or the lighting's just a little too bright, and you know, instead of 20 years ago, you're like, well, look, we're here, it's fine. Now you're like, you go back to your phone and you're like, calamari, dim lighting, Boston. And you are trying to solve in real time everything that you feel isn't quite right about a situation. I feel this all the time. I don't know how many times I've walked into a restaurant and been like, oh, they don't have a margarita, that, you know, a spicy margarita, I'm out. And I'm applying this in this conversation to Ben Simmons and to NBA players, because it almost feels like there's a form of life optimization going on here, where like the ability to self-soothe and correct what has gone wrong in a situation, like, for example, in Philly, whether those are hard conversations you have to have with teammates or difficult conversations with management, it's as if that is a lost art now. Not just for Ben Simmons, but for a lot of us. Like, this idea of working through difficult conversations and staying, even though it might be dicey for a little while, and getting to a better place on the other side, is not an art form that many of us have to practice anymore. And I don't think NBA players have to practice it at all.
Well, you know what? I actually think, I don't want to switch gears on this, because I think this is part of what I'm going to say, so it's not really switching gears. But I think there's two things to this. One, let's focus on labor. Right? Let's focus on what Kate just said, but through the framework of labor. Number one, there is no choice because you have a draft. You didn't choose to come to Philadelphia. You were drafted. One of the things that I've always said was, I wonder what the NBA would be like with no draft if everybody was a free agent from day one and everybody had to bid on players, right? Now, all of these different structures, whether you're talking about baseball, whether you're talking about football, all of these structures were created decades ago in a very, very different world. I was talking to a friend of mine about this the other day. When I was a kid, and I'm the old man of this group, the NBA draft was 10 rounds.
Yeah.
There's only 12 players on a roster. None of those players, maybe the first round draft pick, if he was a top 10 pick, was going to make the team, right? Maybe the first round guy was going to sit the bench or whatever. But in that sport, you don't have choices. The reason why there's a draft in Major League Baseball is because the Cardinals and the Yankees had all the power, and all the other teams were like, we can't compete with this. So we're creating structures. So if you're Ben Simmons, you didn't really ever choose to come to Philadelphia. So it's not as though I chose this place and the lighting wasn't right. It was, I've never had a choice to come here. And this is my first choice to get out. I thought about that with Kawhi Leonard, that when Kawhi Leonard went to Los Angeles, that was the first time in his professional career he'd actually had a choice to decide where he was going to play. And that he had been part of three organizations. I mean, he was part of a draft day deal, right? So he never went to Indiana. He goes to San Antonio, and then he gets traded to Toronto. So this is the first agency he's ever had. The other thing in talking about this, just from a basketball labor specific subject, you can't pull this in football unless you're a quarterback. You probably can't pull this in baseball, because basketball is a best player wins sport. No other professional athlete, maybe a quarterback, but no other professional athlete has the same power as a superstar, legendary, top shelf basketball player. You change everything with your presence. You're the 29-win Boston Celtics in 1980. You're the 61-win Boston Celtics when Larry Bird shows up. You know, you're the garbage-ass San Antonio Spurs, and then David Robinson shows up and you win 61 games, right? When you put LeBron James on your team, you are an NBA final contender. This is how much power these players have by the nature of that sport. So it's not just, well, you know, where we are and what's with this generation. It's also with the fact that in that specific game, those players do have enormous amounts of power.
And I think a lot of executives and coaches and personnel around the league are looking at this situation and saying, Ben Simmons misplayed his cards.
Yeah, he's not that guy. Because
he's not that guy.
If you put Ben Simmons on your team, you're not an NBA Finals contender automatically because he's there.
But like, look at what happened, Howard, to the Brooklyn Nets, where KD, there was a report that KD turned down a Kyrie Irving trade, just slapped it down and said, no, we're not trading that guy. And then suddenly, when the mandate comes out, Sean Marks, the GM of the Brooklyn Nets, says, no, Kyrie Irving, you're gonna be sidelined. You're not part of the team. There's no half measures here. You're either part of what we're doing, you're in fully, or you're out. And we didn't hear KD say, whoa, that's my guy. We can't be saying this stuff. I do think that Kevin Durant has reached a point where he's like, you know what, Kyrie's, I did not see this coming. I thought he was going to solve this by now. And he's going and playing with James Harden. And for Ben Simmons, the tough thing is that Joel Embiid's on the team, where he might have thought that he held the cards, but there's an MVP candidate right there who's, they're probably going to win 50 games with Joel Embiid, right? So the leverage that Ben Simmons had, or what he thought he had, doesn't actually exist. And I do think that he's probably misstepping here too, is that showing up to a practice in sweatpants and a hoodie and having some sort of phone device type device in your pocket and knowing that the media, by the way, people, he knew that the media was coming in, the cameras were coming out. Kate, you've covered the 76ers, literally a practice by the 76ers. And when the media is opening the doors at the end of practice, all the players know, all right, it's media time, you know, play time's over. Like, Ben Simmons knew that whatever he was doing was going to get caught on film. And if they were going to do a team huddle, he was not going to take a part of it and it would become a story. I can't imagine he's not that self-aware. So I just think that if he's acting this way, and according to reports, they want him to do a drill, he didn't want to do it, and then when Doc Rivers kicked him out, he dropped his ball and he went home, literally. I don't think that's helping smooth these trade talks around the league. Like, this isn't helping matters, is it, Howard? Like, if this is a move, if this is a chess move by Ben Simmons to just act childish, fine, you wanted me to be here? Well, here you go. I don't think this is making Daryl Morey's job easier, right? Like, I don't think this is getting his way. Maybe Adam Silver gets on the phone and says, look, we have to solve this issue, Daryl. I know you don't want to take that Indiana deal. or I don't know if you wanted to take that Portland deal, but look, we gotta move on. I don't think this move is actually helping Ben Simmons.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Yeah, I think there are two things here. I think one is the Ben's, you're right. I mean, is this helping Ben Simmons in a micro? Who's going to win that tug of war? Who's going to blink? Well, if Ben Simmons is no longer playing for the Philadelphia 76ers in a week, then I'm sure he's going to feel that he won and that maybe he feels like he's got something in his back pocket besides a cell phone where I'm going to show you I'm one of the best players in the league as soon as I get the hell out of here. And as soon as I get out, you're all going to see who what I'm all about. But the other piece of this is the larger question that we've talked about. And that is, this is not player empowerment. This is a contract dispute, right? There's a conflation here, but they're also somewhat similar in that, okay, where is the example of player empowerment? Because what I find interesting about all this, once again, is that when we were adopting that term, when that term had been introduced, we were talking about it in terms of players using their voice to be citizens. We were talking about players using their voice to impact communities. We were talking about players being pieces, being a part of the world, and not, it was the antithesis of shut up and dribble, not I'm going to pout and force my way out of Houston. That's not what player empowerment was supposed to be.
Yeah. I mean, he does have a 5-year contract, right? Like, this is a player who signed on the dotted line in 2019 to extend, make more money than he could elsewhere, and signed a 5-year deal with the 76ers.
Yeah. And so the real question is professionalism. Go ahead, to me.
Yeah. I mean, he signed the 5-year deal, and Jimmy Butler, when he acted out in practice and dropped a nuclear bomb on the Minnesota Timberwolves, he was in an expiring deal, which made things easier for the Timberwolves to say, all right, he's not part of our long-term plans, and wherever he goes, they know the deal. He is a short-term rental and may have an inside track to signing him long-term. The 76ers, ironically enough, got Jimmy Butler, and then he went to Miami. So all is to say, Ben Simmons did sign in Philly, but not because he loved Philly, I don't think. They drafted him. He signed in Philly because they could give him more money than anybody else. And maybe this was the plan all along.
Well, separate from the what seems to be the mismanagement right now of Ben, by Ben Simmons' camp, all right, I mean, that's how I think of it as an outsider looking into it. I wonder if there's anything to this idea that, you know, the echo chambers we all live in, that if we're looking not just at this situation with Ben Simmons, but using it to try to explain what the future of the NBA is, certain other circumstances we're seeing in the NBA, there are a lot of players that have created their own echo chambers that, even 5 years ago, you know, Tom, as you alluded to in your essay, you'd have very few players who would be employing full-time people across genres, right? Like masseuse, business. I mean, of course, players would have like personal assistants or business managers, but you wouldn't necessarily have a shooting coach, a traveling masseuse. It's very much like the Tom Brady model that a lot of these players have that we might have said 10 years ago, like, oh, you're surrounded by yes people. Well, now it almost seems like it's not like players are surrounded just by people who are there to say yes and tell the player they're great, but that they have all of these other functions which distract from the fact that they are yes people in a lot of ways, but they actually have functions. So it seems like a player could get caught up in an echo chamber of their own making where they don't have that connection to the team in the same way they might have where it's like, okay, well, I don't have the person who tapes my ankle isn't my personal you know, physical therapist or personal trainer. It's like, it just seems like these connections are being severed one by one from these players and some version of what team should mean.
Yeah. But even that is a byproduct of labor. It's a fight. And this, and on the one hand, you could say, well, yes, this makes perfect sense because of all the decades when the team didn't care about you as a player, you couldn't trust them because all they wanted you to do was to play. They didn't have their best interests they didn't have your best interests at heart. So of course I'm going to hire my own guy. I'm going to get a second opinion. I'm going to have my own team. But what you're talking about also, Kate, is just, this is what happens when you've got $40 million a year at your disposal, when you're making $80 million. What is LeBron's salary this year? You know, I think it's in the 70s, isn't it? Or even
no, it's not even in the 70s. If you want to include Nike on top,
yeah, it's $98 million.
It's up there. But the actual NBA or the Lakers paying him is much. It's about half that.
Yeah. So, but he's going to bring in $100 million this year, right? However you put it, like I think Jordan at one point was making $39 million a year. So whatever. So these are enormous dollars, and you know. This goes back to what we were talking about before, about the heroic nature of the rise of labor and then what you morph into. Because at one point, sure, you didn't trust the team doctor. I mean, I remember a team trainer used to tell me all the time, my job is not to make players healthy. My job is to have players healthy enough to play. Big difference there. They are not the same thing. And so, yeah, man, you're cheering on the fact that the player now has his own guy, and they've got their own doctors and they've got their own team, but at a price, especially when you're in the middle of negotiation or when you're in the middle of a dispute, or when you're talking about the larger question of team and community and all these things, there's no way that you can have those concepts when, you know, it's almost like the Red Sox. It's like 25 players, 25 cabs now. If everybody has their own, then how do you navigate this in the fourth quarter when we need to count on each other and we need a basket?
You alluded to it earlier. Where does this go from here? Like the back of the jersey, the name on the back of the jersey seems to be more important than ever than the front of the jersey. And we're losing that sort of community bond of a player and his team, a player and his region, what it means. And I can understand why players are like, yeah, I have my own medical staff. I have my own team here because you can trade me tomorrow. And then I have to start from scratch with a new team trainer and a new masseuse. Why don't I just have my own? I have the money for it.
And I can afford it. Exactly.
Right. So
make them all free agents.
I just wonder if player empowerment and what's happening with Ben Simmons and Kyrie is that we're seeing the fraying of teams, the actual Brooklyn Nets, the actual Philadelphia 76ers, and in the NBA specifically, they're looking at this like, is this good for the sport? Is that at the beginning of the season, the season opener is here, and no one's talking about LeBron versus Steph?
Yeah, and this is where like, I know I'm trying to make connections to broader culture, but it shouldn't be lost on all of us that all of the places where we used to get community have also been fraying. Like the general idea of community, whether you thought of it, general you thought of it as a made up conceit anyway in America or not, the places where we supposedly had community have been fraying for years and years to the point now where like, I don't think that many of us have that much outside community. So it's like, and you see it being replicated in a way in the NBA where it's like, it's a fraying of community. And to use sadly a cliche, it's like, we are always like power corrupts. And you're seeing like these NBA players get power and it's now so many years in and so much money in. And I'm not saying that they're all corrupt in any way, but you can start to see it fraying to the point where you're seeing it impact at least someone who grew up like obviously a basketball obsessed. It's fraying at what I thought were like the sacred cows of the game. It's like team and community being at the heart of everything everyone always talks about. Any post-game interview you ever talk about, it's like, well, I did it for my teammates. It's like, can't even really say that with a straight face anymore, because who did you do? I mean, that's not to say, obviously, there's a lot of NBA guys who love their teammates, and there's a lot of teams out there who actually probably are genuinely teams, but I do worry about this idea of like this fraying of what community is and then seeing it paralleled in the NBA.
I actually feel like that if we're going to couple these two concepts, if you're going to couple this idea of player empowerment, that the player is going to have more voice, then I think that also needs to be coupled with something else, which is an increased level of professionalism, that you don't just get to do whatever you want to do. And you do have damage. There are going to be damaging consequences to that if you're going to just blow up teams. And we've seen it. And this is nothing new. I mean, we also saw this. Magic Johnson blew up a team in 1980 when with the Lakers, and when Paul Westhead was the coach back then, when Pat Riley took over a couple of years later. And so clearly these things, it's a constant tug of war for power and for balance. And I understand that. But at the same time, you do have a responsibility to be professional. Just because you can do certain things doesn't mean it's good for you or good for your team. Can anybody make the argument right now that the way Ben Simmons is handling himself is good for anybody outside of Ben Simmons?
And maybe not even that.
And maybe not even
he could be traded to a team he doesn't want. Like the chances are is that just pure numbers, the probability that he is traded to one of his favorite teams that on his list is almost nil, right? That Daryl Morey and Joshua Harris, the owner in Philly, if they have a list of offers, what are the chances that it's what Ben Simmons wants? And then we're going to start this all over again if he's traded to a team he doesn't want to be at.
This idea that NBA players feel at times when I'm paying attention to the NBA, it feels like they're just out of reach. They're out of reach with, out of step as well. And I don't know, that's a generalization, but I think we've seen a couple things over the last year that it feels at times like NBA players have become Hollywoodized, and there's this sense, and they always have been, but even more so, just gathering power. They have more people around them. There's more commodification of who they are. I've been having a lot of conversations lately just with friends of mine trying to deconstruct my own emotions around Adele recently, considering that she just dropped the first single off of her new album, and I'm a big Adele fan. And what I've been talking about and thinking about is why Adele, over the last couple of years, I mean, it's been widely reported, like, her posting on Instagram, like, she's lost a lot of weight. And I've been trying to process my own feelings about what it is about this transformation about Adele that has caused me to pull away from my fandom of her or see her differently. And I think that what I've landed on, and I'll run it by you guys, is just two things, right? One is just the concept of relatability and how pre-Adele 2 years ago just felt to me like in most ways she was untouchable. Obviously her voice is ethereal. She sold 120 million albums. She was very funny and personable, charming. In no ways Adele relatable, except she just embodied and hadn't been gobbled up by what I see as like the Hollywood consumer culture. And I feel like I have lost Adele to like the bright white light of like refinement culture, that the last bridge to her relatability has been severed, and that she is now fully a product of like refinement, capitalistic consumer culture. And I can't find a part of Adele now that I'm like, yeah, you know what? She feels like a real person to me now. It's like she has just been sucked up. It's not.
Cedric the Entertainer. Album, does it still feel like you're listening to the artist that you were listening to before?
We only have one single, and it's tough for me to separate my emotions pre-single to what the single feels like to me. It just seems less relatable. It seems like you have been living in your Hollywood Hills compound. And I'm relating this to the NBA in that it feels like there is this obsessive refinement commodification culture, and they are a part of it as well. And all of that leads to these bridges of relatability that I keep calling them, like getting burned one after another. And I do worry about, like, I do think a lot about, like, this, what I'm calling, like, the obsessive refinement culture that's, like, once you reach a certain level, you are on warp speed toward, like, pouring money into your body, your appearance, your PR, your masseuse, like, in a way that is unimaginable to,
would,
like,
you feel
a
this way
fan.
If she hadn't lost 75 pounds or however many pounds she lost? I mean, how much of it is just the visceral, the visual of looking at somebody and seeing how much, how different they look from your introduction of them?
Yeah, I mean, some of it, it's impossible to know. I think if you pay attention, if you're someone who, like, streams shows, and my wife and I talk about this a lot, if a hit show has a star and in the opening season they look even somewhat like a normal person, right? Like, there is some small amount of body fat on them, you can guarantee by the second season that has been completely eradicated. And I think a lot about, like, you know, like Insecure and Issa Rae. And, like, if you go back and you look at everyone in that cast, they come back for the second season and they have turned into Marvel superheroes. And I think that there is, I have a concern for that culture because I feel like it reflects back on everyone. And you see it perpetuated in what we're told to buy and how we're told to look and all of that. But I think when it comes to Adele, I saw her as, like, yeah, but Adele's not caught up in that culture. And I think that that last bridge for me felt like it was some end of being able to feel like she was actually a real person and not just a product of a system now.
Has she explained why she lost that weight? Is there, like, a health concern? Like, she found out that she has, like, a heart condition and she needs to really, like, eat better or exercise more? Like, have we heard that? Or is it just she's sold out to Hollywood?
Well, I don't even want to, like, suggest that I think she sold out, because it's almost like I don't want this to be a conversation about her particular body, because, like, if she feels better, she feels better. I'm reflecting on why I feel this way and what I think it represents and what I think happens to people who get put in positions like that.
But would that explanation do anything for you? Like, if she did come out and say, look, I found out that I have this hereditary thing that I needed to control. Like, would that change things? Or, like, would you be like, oh, it's not Hollywoodification?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it would make a difference. But I also think I just miss the essence of old Adele. I don't know, even if I had a reason, even if it was a health reason, I still think I'd be like, I just miss that previous version of you. That doesn't mean that it's right and I have no control over your body, but I miss that, and I miss what it represented for me.
Yeah, and we also miss those versions of them because we miss those versions of ourselves. When we look at people, it's like, oh, that Adele is when I was 8 years younger, right? So you're also thinking about where you were at that period of your life. But absolutely, this is what we do, right? When we think about all of the different strains of capitalism and of the public life and of fame and all of these things, how many different ways do you see it manifest? How many different ways do you say, oh, well, look, this person in their, you know, when they didn't have any money? I mean, it's really interesting. Like, one of the areas where you see it, where you see these transformations, is look at the NBA draft. Look at how silly LeBron's super cream colored suit looked when he was 18 years old, as opposed to how he dresses today. He dresses like he has way more money than he had back then. This is what this culture does to us. You talk to people about, you know, when you start earning, people look at you differently. When you gain different circles, people look at you differently. You date different people. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, did I become more attractive, or did my bank account get a little big? You start looking at all of the different stars that we've seen, especially the ones over time when we've seen them grow up on camera. You've essentially seen somebody through, you know, the last 25 or 30 years, especially if they're in a similar, like, look at the way LeBron James looked when he first came into the league, and look at him now. You've actually seen this man grow up. His adult years have been spent directly in front of you. So it's absolutely true. And I think that when you see someone like Adele, when you see a superstar like that, I think it's the jarring nature of the fact that she looked human and now she looks like she has a personal trainer, right? She looks like she is in the business of doing things that the rest of us cannot do. Like, I think maybe in the past, maybe you may have seen her as somebody who was a superhero because she had a superhuman voice that we would all kill for. But her body seemed to be going through the same stuff that all of our bodies go through. And now she's beyond that because that's what money and fame and access and resources can do. I don't know, because I mean, Tom may be right. There may be some other reason that she comes out and says, here's what happened to me. But for us, the public, it is extremely jarring. And we do sort of make these different stretches as to say, you are beyond us. And this is another example of you being beyond us. And we lose a little bit when we feel like that connection's been broken.
Right. And there is this connection that's been broken with Ben Simmons, with Kawhi Leonard. When Kawhi Leonard was with the Spurs and he was with Tim Duncan and he won the finals MVP in 2014, there was this kind of unspoken bond with San Antonio that Kawhi Leonard is not like LeBron.
That's Kawhi right. Leonard. He doesn't want to go Hollywood. He's just a grinder who's all about winning and all about the game and all about team. And he's a Popovich guy, you know, and you don't have to look at him. He's not going to go full diva and all that type of stuff, right? And all these different terms. These are things that we place on them. I don't know Kawhi Leonard. I've never met him. I've never spoken to him. He doesn't even talk. So you have no idea who he is.
Right. And so what we do is we build up this image of who that person is based on, well, he won a championship with Popovich. They must be great. Everyone gets along with Pop. He's Pop. And Kawhi Leonard and Pop and the Spurs, this is going to be the next Tim Duncan, right? And then when he says, I'm not showing up because I don't trust your medical staff, or I don't trust you as an organization, there is some dissonance there as a fan, is understanding, who do I side with here? The image of what I thought Kawhi was, knowing that he can usher in this another championship or two championships down the line, or do I side with the management, which is Pop, which is the idea of the Spurs, which is the idea of this aura of San Antonio Spurs and Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker. You're asking the fan to believe in a false narrative is kind Always. Of what all of this is, sports in general, is Philly believes that Ben Simmons should be proud to represent Philly on his chest. The parochial nature of Philadelphia and the Northeast and the old NBA and these battles between New York and Boston and New York and Philly. You think back on your parents and what they rooted for and rooted against. And watching
none of
Ben
this has
Simmons
anything to do with Ben Simmons.
Right. And I think the reason I would be surprised if Ben Simmons suited up in a Philly uniform ever again, first of all. And secondly, what the audience would do. And they, I feel like, are going to boo, because that image of what you're supposed to be, a star in Philly, and what that's supposed to mean to Ben Simmons, I don't think he cares. Well, why would he care?
It shouldn't, because they don't care. I mean, like, for example, I was so disappointed at the time when you could see what was going on with the Spurs and Kawhi. And the reason wasn't because I thought Kawhi should be a Spur for life. It was because, do we have another organization that is going to just wipe out a professional athlete? Are they really not doing right by this guy? Right. I mean, so to me, it goes back to Kate's point about having a guy. I mean, here's the reason why I have a team, because that team, medical team, can't be trusted. That medical team would rather have me go out and play in the fourth quarter of a stupid game against the Kings and end my career. I got to look out for my career. I cannot trust these people. And so this goes back to that labor battle. On the other hand, there is nobody, no element in the sport more selfish than sports fans. You are our entertainment. We need you to represent for us our idea of what this is supposed to mean to me. It's not our business. It's their business. And so it's our entertainment. It's their business. So if I'm Ben Simmons, you know, it does go back to that idea of professionalism. And is there a professional connection or professional attachment, a loyalty, not even loyalty, because that's too harsh, but a professional responsibility to this organization and to this league, right? The baseline of sports is that it's the belief that this is valuable, that this is important. It's really not important, but we make it important.
There's also an overall myth that I think exists in sports and that fans buy into, and that is that athletes are passionate about their game. Some athletes are passionate about their game. Some athletes are passionate about sports, but probably a much smaller percentage that any fan is willing to admit actually is obsessed with the game of basketball, football, baseball, whatever. The rest are doing it because it has been positively reinforced in many ways throughout their lives, including and up to with millions of dollars. And I think you're not even allowed to say, like, even in college, you're not even allowed as an athlete to say that you aren't passionately in love with your sport. You can't possibly say, like, well, I actually don't like basketball, but I'm a professional.
No.
And I show up and I work hard. But fans think that you have to be as passionate about it as they are.
1999, Jose Canseco beats the 99, maybe 98. I don't remember what year it was. I think it was 98. Jose Canseco beats the Oakland A's with a walk-off home run. We're in Toronto. And I remember going over to him and we were just talking. And I remember asking him, you know, do you love the game? And he just looked at me and gave me this quizzical look. And he goes, where the fuck else am I going to make $7 million? You know, I mean, he just like broke it down right there. And the penalty that so many athletes pay when it comes out, I didn't really love the game. I mean, you know, it's a job. I mean, that's such a wonderful trap to be in, right? That you are expected to love the game the way the same dude who's tailgating and he's got a size 52 Ray Lewis jersey on. They are two totally different dynamics. Do we penalize journalists for not loving the beat, right? I like to write, but did I really want to go to a 3-game set in Cleveland? No.
Yep.
I didn't. And there is a certain, and once again, that the reason for that is because this is our pleasure and it's their job.
Yeah, sports have been mythologized in this way, in a way unlike almost any other profession. I mean, I don't even think you would say like musicians need to project a desperate passion for music in the way that athletes have to project they are passionate.
Yeah. Right. Because the difference between sports and music in a lot of ways is that you can produce music and not tour. It's kind of mm-hmm. hard to play professional sports and not be forced at some level to interact with the public. Right. That's like the movies. You know, if you're an actor, we don't ever really ask if you love acting or not, because we don't get to talk to you post-game or pre-game. It's not a constant interview situation where that tightness, that connection with the public is there the way it is in sports. And it really is true. Oh, man, it would be great if he actually liked the game. He doesn't love the game. And that to me, there's a paternalism involved in that you have to be grateful for what we're giving you, that it's not really a profession. And because it's not really a profession, because it's a charity, that you better love what you have. And when you add the racial and gender components to it and the rest of that stuff, it's like you're almost like you're betraying the industry when it is a job, like it or not, it's a job.
Most people's experiences playing sports end at a level before which sports turn into an aggressively business situation.
Yeah.
And that's getting younger and younger these days when you look at club and all of that across sports. But most people don't understand how sports gets very quickly spun out of control at the college level and then into the professional level, that erodes any sort of passion or love you might have experienced as a young person playing this thing. And I'd also suggest that like sports is unique in the space it occupies as well, because most young kids play it, and most young kids get so much positive reinforcement when they're kids for playing sports by everyone in their life, that it can't be possible that everybody who's playing sports that's the thing that they truly lights them up inside. So then you refine it up to the college and pro level, and what you have is not an industry defined by passion, but an industry that has been funneled up through size, speed, dedication, a lot of other factors. And one of those but does not make it all the way to the top is like love of this thing. And I don't think that fans allow any space for that reality to be true. And especially not if someone's going to verbalize it or behave in a way to suggest that that is how they feel. And so I think that is part of Ben Simmons right now.
It's because we're jealous of them. We're, well, for $40 million to put a ball through a hoop, you better love it. You better be happy. You better be grateful. I mean, you could be working in a cubicle, man. You could be an electrician, right? I mean, this is the way that we frame this stuff. You know, whenever I talk to players about when they quit, you know, why did you quit? Most of them, very few players will say, I just couldn't do it anymore. I mean, even though that's probably true, but the biggest reason a lot of these guys quit is because they don't want to put the effort in anymore because it's hard. I don't want to exercise anymore. I don't want to work out anymore. I don't want to watch what I have to eat anymore. I want a cheeseburger, right? I don't want to do this anymore. And my body really, really, really hurts, right? We don't have the professional respect that we're supposed to have for this industry because we all want to be them, right? Because there are so many people who think that they want to be them when actually you probably might not, especially if you really like cheese fries, right? I mean, if you like food, I mean, think about the sacrifices you have to make to do this, to be part of this. And we don't really discuss any of that nearly enough. And it's because of the money and the distance and all of those things. But nevertheless, it's a real industry and it's a real job. And yet when you talk to regular people, to the wives, right? If regular people get to talk to the wives, that's always really like suddenly the bubble is burst. Oh, you got traded like five times. Where do your kids go to school? And oh, you had to maintain this residence. And all of a sudden it becomes real, you know? And it's like, oh, you guys live where? And then suddenly that it's not such a glamorous thing. Oh, well, you know, especially if you're a 25th man, like Joe Morgan used to say it all the time. Sports are only fun if you're great at them. If you're not great at it, it's a really hard grind and it's not a whole lot of fun.
I think to put a bow on this side of things is Ben Simmons went to LSU and had a very team-wise, not a great year, and checked out. Didn't make the tournament. And then was rewarded with the number one pick in the draft. And then he was rewarded with being one of the youngest all-stars in the NBA, or all NBA players. He's an all-star, defensive player of the year candidate. And that's all well and good until you turn down a layup in the biggest moment of your career, right? Then all those demons or all the yes men around you, what do you say then? What's it like to hit that adversity, hit that wall, and then turn around and say, oh, that's my fault? It hasn't worked out very well for Ben because I think there's two things going on. Doc Rivers made those comments saying, I don't think he's the championship caliber point guard for us, or I'm not sure if he is. And Joel Embiid basically said, man, come on. Like, that was the season right there. That was the season. Ben Simmons didn't want to hear that. And whether that's because he's been coddled or babysat, as Joel Embiid said today, I don't know. Is that Rich Paul's fault that he didn't manage that situation? I do think we should mention here that Daryl Morey, who's the president of basketball operations for the Philadelphia 76ers, made that tweet in siding with the protesters in China, in Hong Kong, when LeBron James was not happy about that situation, right? He said that Daryl Morey was uneducated about this issue when LeBron James was overseas in China when Daryl Morey sent out that tweet and the NBA lost hundreds of millions of dollars, right, from China. I don't think that that's totally irrelevant in this conversation with Rich Paul being the agent for LeBron James and being such a big voice in that dilemma, the China dilemma, and then you have Adam Silver on the phone and Daryl Morey, what's going to happen? This is all coming together here. And Ben Simmons doesn't trust the 76ers, doesn't trust them with either his career or doesn't trust them with getting to where he wants to be in his next spot. But I think this is all part of that same conversation is management. Does Ben Simmons trust Daryl Morey and Doc Rivers and the ownership in Philly? He obviously doesn't, right? And whether that's the same thing with Kyrie or whether that's the same thing with Zion or whether that's the same thing with, you know, James Harden before that and Jimmy Butler before that, I think the more that this happens, I don't think this is a good thing for the NBA because then in the next rights deal, maybe they get a ton of money. Maybe they get more billions and billions more than they already do. But I really worry about how much of the conversation on all of these TV networks and all these podcasts and all the media is talking about stuff off the court rather than on the court. Not to say that NFL has figured it out, but watching an NFL game and pregame and postgame, it is so much more about football than it is in the NBA. And I just, yeah. I think this has got to be fixed at some point. They have to come together and figure out these standoffs because it can't continue at the pace that we're at.
Yeah. I also think to Kate's point really quickly, I mean, I think that there's a lottery that's taking place here. And these guys are, they're the winners of the gene pool. They're the winners of many things that we all say we want as employees. And one of the things that you get as the winner of a lottery is you get some choice. Maybe what we're going to see over these next several decades or years or whatever is shorter careers. And you don't have to play 20 years anymore if you don't want to, because you're already set for life after three or four. Maybe what you're seeing. I mean, if Kyrie Irving, if this was 1967, we're not even having this conversation because those guys are making $8,000 a year. They need to play to work, right? Today, you don't have to do all the things that the culture, the sports culture, expects you to do because you've got the agency. You know, maybe we're going to see guys play 7 years and I'm done. I did what I had to do, and that's that. And that's part of where the industry is. You're afforded that with the money. The money gives you that now.
Howard Bryant, Tom Haverstraw, thanks.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike. And typically, I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right. You crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text SUNNY to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text SUNNY to 200-300. That's SUNNY to 200-300. SUNNY to 200-300.